up top, we're going up top. All the other formations, they surely have to stop. We're going up top, we're going up top.
You are listening to the One Up Top podcast, hosted by Jordan. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast and all of our social media.
Can't get it on her feet, Clark. Brent! Bows the bullet at the death! Daily Mail Park has erupted in madness! The fans are on the pitch, the managers are on the pitch, the subs are on the pitch! It's Bedlam in Dublin Foot 7! Unbelievable scenes! Bows have won it at the death for the second time in 5 days in a Dublin derby! Alan Cawley, what have we witnessed?
And a very big welcome to this week's episode of One Up Top, episode 51 now. And I'm delighted to be joined by Bows commentator, Bows fan, Irish chief rugby correspondent, Rory O'Connor. How you get on, Rory?
Hey, Jordan, what's crack?
Not too bad. All good. Only one place to start, really. Leinster 37, Glasgow Warriors 19. Are we Leo out or Leo in?
I'm always neutral on these things. I don't know. You're trying to lose subscribers. I'm not sure you're going to sell a Bows podcast talking about Leinster rugby. I know there's a few people who go to both, but I was at Clontarf one time and I saw a couple of people in Bows jerseys watching Clontarf play an AAL game. But I don't think we have a huge crossover with Leinster rugby. I'm one of the few who has an interest in both. But Croke Park this weekend. But I don't think I'm going to make Cork on Friday night. But that's where my heart will be this weekend.
Yeah, I suppose the Bows Leinster faction's probably getting a bit stronger now with the few Aviva trips we've had over the last few years.
True. But,
you never know.
If we end up in the RDS next year, you never know. Or Donnybrook.
Yeah, that could well be the case, all right. I suppose there's only really one place to start. Another win on the Friday night in Dalymount, something we were nearly didn't know what felt like this time last year, or even this time 8 weeks ago. How did you think the affair went? I suppose 1-0 win, another 3 points on the board, and you know we're sort of edging closer and closer to getting up to the top of the table where we all want to be.
We've gone from like the last minute Bohemians to the score an early penalty and hold on for 89 minutes. A very different team, a different performance. Like the confidence. Think back, like we're playing Cork on Friday night. Like, think back to the last time we played Cork and needing McManus to get that goal late in the game. And the transformation of this team in those nine games of the last series of games is just phenomenal. Like the confidence, maturity. I know they're not perfect, and like against Shells, even the Derry game. I didn't see all the Derry game; I was away. But they're able to hang on to a 1-0 lead for that long. Like you couldn't trust this team to hang on to that, and like go ahead first of all, and then hang on to it for so long. And now the belief levels they got from those couple of late wins are just, it's so powerful in a team. The atmosphere in the stadium, like I haven't been for a couple of weeks, but even watching the highlights, watching the, you know, social media on a Friday, it's such a different thing. The whole mood around the club, it's so much more fun to be around at the moment. And it's because the team are delivering for us. And because they're, you know, you can see the development of someone like Dawson who's just running games now. And like, I don't know how well we're going to be able to sustain it for the rest of the season in terms of like being right up there, but to see off, I know Derry, all the reports were that Derry were way off what they've been in recent weeks, and obviously Tiernan Lynch making those changes during the game suggests that he wasn't happy with what he was seeing from his team, but that's not Bowe's problem. That's been Bowe's really so many odd times in the last 2 or 3 years, whereas now we're able to kind of show up, deliver a performance. We're white knuckling it a bit because we can't score goals to kind of, like, you know, obviously that draw it out the previous week when like we really should have got more out of that game because we're not converting our chances and we got done a bit by the ref. But like it's such a different outlook going on a Friday night now. It's such a different outlook keeping an eye on results if you're not there. You kind of believe that they're going to do something every week. And I think that's such a shift in such a short period of time. And that's great.
Yeah. Like even I think went in last week, we're talking about it. And I think we had five or six wins in 15 years at home against Derry. I'm not sure many times you played them. It must have been probably, you're talking at least 20, 25, possibly even 30, including cup games. To come out there, get the 1-0 victory, it's, you know, it's sort of what we've been screaming for. I was looking at the stats, I think, or XG, I don't really buy into that all nonsense. I know some people do, but You know, conversion rate is the second lowest in the league, and just kind of wonder where we'd be if we had a clinical striker. I know Moose, I think you can nearly write off the Moose if he's not ready to go this time next month, in my opinion. Colly Whelan again, you know, he seems to do all the hard work, but you know, at the end of the day, our striker's there to put the ball into the back of the net. I'm not sure what your thinking is about the two men of boys up front. I think you always have to start looking in the transfer window when it arises to maybe, you know, taking someone that a proven goal scorer. Can you take a Pat Hoban down from Derry? I know there's a few people ask questions about Georgie Kelly. I don't think he'll be coming home anytime soon. I think he's still contracted. But what's your view from, you probably have the best seat in the whole stadium, in fairness, from the gantry. But what's your viewpoint from the top of the pitch?
We need to sack the climate officer and offer Georgie a chance to come back in a dual role and kind of get his post football career started. Like he'd be ideal. I think Whelan's a really good player, and from everything I see from him is really good, but I don't think he really suits our style of play. And we're like Ndrada, he barely got any flashes, and then that ball broke to him in the box, and with no backlift at all, he smacks it off the bar, and you're like, this guy has something, but we're not. And our style play is really like it's good, it's effective in other ways, but it doesn't seem to play to his strengths at all. And we're not getting him chances. I think it's as much that as it is him. I think there's a really good player in there. And like I'm not a huge fan of the James Clark experiment. I understand that to a degree, and he's very effective in terms of making it difficult for opposition. And like, you know, he's good in Tallaght that day, and but he doesn't score. You know, Ross Tierney's not. I heard Vinnie Pear talking on the Off the Ball podcast during the week, and it was a good point. Like, if we can get Ross Tierney scoring, it'll take a lot of the pressure off the front men. Like, I'm still holding out for the Moose. I think, you know, we can see there's obviously flaws. There's obviously also unbelievable potential there, but like this recurring Achilles injury and just not being able to get on the pitch. Like, how's he going to get fit if he's not fit enough to play in a Friday night? And even like if we're not able to get Colin Whelan into position to score, how are we going to get him into position to score? Because he's not mobile. Like his goal came from Bucco just like lofting a ball over the top. The kind of pass we don't ever play.
Yeah.
Bucco just kind of a speculative one. And he arses two of them out of it and score. It was like we don't create that kind of chance. Or, you know, it's so I don't know. I think someone like Georgie or Afolabi, like that was such a focal point for the team when those two players were there. And we really missed that, even just as an out. Like when earlier in the season we were tapping it between, like how many times in the first block of games did Lee Cavanagh pass the ball to Rob Cornwall and give it back to Talbot, who was there, and then give it back to them? And like that draw to the game, the defeat early in the season, it was just the back four passing the ball to each other over and over again. They had no one to hit. Like, and when Georgie was there, it wasn't long ball stuff, but it was just there was an option there to go direct if we had to and change the picture for them. And we don't have that at the moment. And I wouldn't like, I don't know if Reynolds wants that in the style of play, but definitely if we can get Hooban, who like I think there's a bit of a journey there to go on between him and O'Donnell after O'Donnell kind of got him out of Dundalk that time. You know, I don't think the trust is great there, so that might be a bit of a mission, but he just wants to play. But anyone who's a proven goal scorer would do wonders to that team and maybe take us, give, well, not, maybe not to the next level, but would definitely give us something extra and make these games much easier, because that draw the game. Post created loads of chances that night, but we were sucker punched by the, you know, one mistake by Graham, a bad mistake, and that killed us for the whole game. Like that's like I take Taylor off, Douglas James Taylor off them in a heartbeat. I think I read that the striker that the Hawaiian, or sorry, Haitian striker they had last year, who, his name I've forgotten already, but that he's back on the market. That the Bosnian move is over, so he might be available. Like
Well,
he'd
that
be a
fell through,
class.
and he was meant to be going there. Perot.
Yeah, France
He's
Piero,
meant to
like
be
he'd
going from
be.
Croatia to Bosnia, but that's fallen through now, has it?
I don't know. I heard that he was on the market. Like he'd be great. Like, you know, he'd just
Yeah, he's
exactly kind
what
of
we
give us,
want, like.
even for the last 20 minutes, some punts, but bringing a guy of his physical profile, he caused Bowes so much damage over the last couple of years. I don't know. Is there an Andre Wright out there they can bring in from England? Like, you know, that he obviously never came back, but that he had a good like 6 months. We just need someone to kind of put the ball in the net for the rest of the season. And also get more from the players who are playing, like Ross Tierney, because Tierney's been great, but he hasn't scored enough goals. So, like, I think there's creating chances, and that's positive. And they're winning tight games, but you do think that that's going to, you know, run its, you know, it's going to even out over the course of a season.
Yeah, most certainly. As you said, like when you don't have that goal scorer up front, without sort of overthinking things, when you look at elite level, look at Arsenal, Havertz, but it's the goals come from the wide areas. Rooney probably
Yeah.
hasn't chipped in off enough from outside sort of set pieces. Probably same could be said about, you know, Parsons got one goal, Brennan's got one goal. Said we're second lowest goal scorers or conversion rate in the league. I think we actually are the second lowest goal scorers in the league, which sort of tells you.
Like Parsons again, like Parsons is barely played as well. Like as much as Moussa hasn't been around, like he looks so sharp in the Aviva on the first game, and really we haven't seen anything from him. And you'd hope that if he gets fit and the pitches are better now at this time of year, like he looks like a quality player based on what I've seen from him at Waterford and with us. So that's another option, and that it takes the pressure off Reece Brennan as well. You know, rather than start Reece Brennan, you can bring him on later on. So the scope for this team to improve, and you would think. Obviously, Gretton's gone. That's a big blow. But you would think there is scope to strengthen to a small degree. And like he's used his windows well, Reynolds. Like every window we've got better. And we haven't, like, we don't lose players in the same way we used to as well. So you'd imagine there's one or two coming in. And in fairness, they're good at keeping their business quiet as well. Like usually these moves drop out of the blue, which is probably a bit frustrating for us not having much gossip to go on. But like, I'm trying to think, like, you know, it was obviously all the lads coming back last summer. So I don't know if there's anyone else out there who I saw Dan Casey signing for an English team. So he's not coming back. But I'm sure Nutsy and Reynolds, whatever they were talking about, the women's game at the weekend, I'm sure there's a couple of transfer targets being lined up.
It wasn't the women's game, I'd imagine they were talking about it anyway. yeah, as you said, you'd like to think there's stuff going on in the background. I think generally it's been probably quiet. You know, the transfer window is about to open, you know, it's just been quite in general across the league. That's sort of where the stability has probably come to the league. You know, a lot of people are tied down to contracts. There's not too much flogging and people getting into each other's ears about it. If there is going to be people transferring, you'd imagine it's going to be a fee on the table job. Like, as much as they might not want to lose Hoban, if the money's right, they'll probably get rid of him and off the books, because he probably is taking a bigger wage up there at the moment in the Brandywell. I suppose we'll go towards the back of the pitch, and you know, I think Reynolds said in an interview there, I can't remember which it was, but he was asked about Gretton leaving, and he said it was his last game in Daly Mount over the Tannoy against Derry, and it was a bit of a send off for him. But Reynolds did sort of allude to maybe there's the Rovers game on a Monday night, and he sort of had a bit of a grin on his face. Whether he could stay till then, that'd be fantastic. Because I think the next three games could really set us up for, you know, the last 15 in terms of the run in and what we actually could be eyeballing up towards the end of the season. You've seen it from above. How have you found Gretton in terms of being on the ball? And
I mean, when things were going badly, he was the one who he started marauding forward from centre half, and it looked like a kind of a weird tactic the first couple of times he did it, but he broke that pattern of the ball just going back and forth. It was so stale early on in the season. And obviously it was a tactic. He was almost playing like a right back, and they do shift between formations within games. And it's quite complex what they're trying to do, I think, kind of shifting between either a back three, a back five, and then a back four when we're in possession. And he I think he's been such an important player for Bowes, and he's a bit of for a young guy, he seems to be a massive leader as well. He's obviously showed up with the big goals, the one against Pats, the one against Galway. Like, as I'd say you're looking at the most valuable loan signing other than maybe Johnny Kenny in the history of the league. Like, he's been absolutely outstanding, because he'd obviously left Bowes and played the odd game, but no one expected him to come in. Like, he was late in the day when they announced it. Kind of, you thought we were set up like with Alex Lacey, who we haven't really seen, Cornwall, and Lee Kavanagh, who I think is a good player but needs a bit of confidence, and probably could have done with being part of this run a bit more, although he was playing in Tala that day. But Graham's been brilliant. I know the penalty and draw shows that he's still got a bit to learn, but like, he's captain in the Ireland under-21s in games. It's such a shame for us that he's going to, like, if they can hang on to him for three more games, oh, absolutely. Like, whatever they can get out of this kid, the better, because he's starting on merit and he's changing games for Bowes, and he's really important. The only worry is that, you know, he is going to go at some stage, but I suppose Keane Byrne's probably going to come back. I don't know if Divin Imazala is going to come back as well. Like, he's obviously up on loan up north, so I haven't seen a lot of him, but obviously you hear that he's a pretty good player as well. So they might have options to strengthen, you know, the back four from players that we have already, and then kind of go after. I don't think we need any more midfielders, but we could do with a couple of front three players as well, and maybe fullback as well. You just look at, like, I mean, Flores has been, I'm delighted for Jordan Flores this year, because up until this season, he had the most miserable Bowes career in the history of Bowes careers. It was just, he signed the season, the long era went south, and it's just been firefighting, and he's been there for all the city, and, you know, the Talca Park Cup defeat and all this, and two cup final defeats. And I'm glad that he's getting something that he, when he finishes, he'll remember his bows. He'll remember it with a couple of good moments because he gives everything for us and he gets a fair bit of flack, understandably, because he's probably one of the more senior players. But he's having a great season. I'm delighted for him.
Yeah, I think I was more than happy enough to write him off at the end of last season myself. You know, I said I think he was the oldest player. He was the captain under Long at times. And then he just never, I don't think he is a leader in terms of on the pitch. Again, that's not all players, but he was a senior player and we're all sort of expecting it from him. Not every player is like that, but I think he's found that left back position to be his own. And, you know, if, again, we were looking at going back in for a left back. If we can get something out of the underage and maybe push him up into reserve, I think we'd all probably be happy enough with that. Transfer window is opening again. You're probably, as you said, we're looking to strengthen the centre half position. Ben Gretton does go. I know Keane Bourne does come back, but if you can get someone with a bit of experience, maybe a bit of class in that position, I think we'd be more than happy to pull the trigger on that and keep Keane Bourne on his out in Galway and earning a straight down there. I suppose we'll move on to the league wide now and probably start Rovers dropping points. We all talk maybe Galway would have been a walkover for them given their recent form of both teams. But, you know, the league will always make a fool of you one way or another. And, you know, there's, I think there's 6 points between us and them now. Just as everyone thought they probably had a one, it's probably just being clawed back in the rest of everyone else's hands a little bit more.
Yeah, with a game in hand as well, which, like, I'm still not convinced that the Bows are really in that mix. And I think last year was if you're going to have a breakout season, last year was the year to do it, because that was the year that Rovers really kind of blew it and Shells were the ones who were there to capital. But Lyon, Pats and Shells have been so poor. There's definitely, and Derry have been slow to get going under Lynch. So like, there's definitely opportunities there for Bows this season to try and keep pace at Rovers. And like, they're not, we've seen, I mean, that was the first points they dropped since Tala, since the 3-2, as far as I know. So like, they've been very good, but Bows have known that they're not, they're far from kind of indestructible or whatever, but they are the best squad, the best collection of players. And when they get them all fit, and you got Dylan Watts, Mandroyu, Jack Byrne, like Graham Burke, like he just gives me nightmares. Like, he always delivers against Bows. They've got a striker coming in from the north who seems to have a fairly good reputation to back up Noonan to challenge Noonan and Aaron Green. So, and their back three is, there's times you look at them and you think, especially in the Tala game, you wonder if they are kind of coming towards the point where they're getting vulnerable. Certainly the way Bowes pressed them that day, they did look like you could get at them. And I think if you go for them, I think the best way to play against Rovers is try and go on the front foot if you can. But still, like, when you put it all together, they have a fairly formidable outfit. And it's good for the league that Galway did manage to peg them back, because if they were 8 points going into the break, a lot of the kind of, certainly my world in the media, like, you are hoping to keep it tight for just keeping the attention on it, because obviously we've never had more attention on it. And you want to have, I'm a bit sick of the title race obsession all the time, but you do want to have that intrigue at the top. So
That's because we're not involved in the title race talk.
It's been a while, like, you know, and the one year we were in it was COVID and we couldn't go to any of the games. So I don't know how I'd handle the title race at this stage of my life. Like, it might be a bit too stressful for me. I think mid-table obscurity is kind of nice, low pressure, but and a taste of a relegation battle for a little while last year, and that was stressful itself. So, but like, I think they're not going to, I don't think they'll run away with it, but they do because of Europe mainly. I think Europe keeps them honest. And that's where the opportunity is for a team like Bows and Derry not having Europe. Like, Drogheda are going to fall. You'd imagine Drogheda will fall away to some degree. And whether Shells and Pats can get it together post-Europe in the way the Pats did last year, that's the danger, you know. But like, Rovers definitely are the best team, but whether they're distracted and how far they go, they're obviously probably not going to go as far this year because they're not in the Champions route. So maybe they'll have a complete focus on it, and maybe this is a year they reassert their dominance. But they don't look much better than everyone else based on certainly the games that we played against them.
Yeah, I think, as you said, that they're seeded in the round of the qualifiers. But again, I don't know what I'm sure Chippy will be able to pull up a stat now over Twitter the next couple of days when he listens to this, that maybe only one or two teams have probably gotten through the playoff, if even. From round one straight through to the Europa Conference League, I can't imagine Rovers doing that, given they've basically had a non-stop season now for the best part of 18 months.
Yeah, and because it's hard. Like, we saw the year that Bows like the Pauk, if the Bows had pulled off that Pauk result, it was one of the, it would mean something else. Like, that was such a difficult fixture. And I know Rovers will have a higher seeding than Bows, but like, it's still, you're talking about teams that will be playing probably, you know, not deep again, kind of in the, not in the, in the final stages, but teams that will get to the knockouts of the Conference League eventually. So, yeah, Shells have a much better route, but whether Shells can pull it all together to go well in Europe. But like, if Shells go well in Europe, it could really harm their chances of getting back into Europe the following year, because they're trying to handle all new stuff. Whereas, like, it's, Rovers are more experienced with it as well. Like, Bradley's been down this road before. Their players have juggled both before. So, but the 18-month thing, I think that's a good point, Jordan. Like they could get fatigued as it goes on and gets into playing 2-3 times a week. And especially if they go, like, after the Cup, like, they're going to go around further in the Cup this year anyway. Like, you know, that's, because everyone got drawn against either first. Yeah, like, everyone, that's more games. So, you know, that's opportunity for someone. It's just whether anyone's good enough and whether Bows are good enough to kind of, to I think it's too early for us. But, like, you know, you're in the mix now, so why not keep the foot down if we can?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, as you said, maybe in my opinion, probably definitely a year too early. I think we've got the nucleus of a squad that probably should be challenging for a league title with the void, Tierney. You know, that midfield, as I said, Rovers probably stronger, put the medals on the table. It's hard to take it away from them. But, you know, we've seen it in two games this year, you know, that they haven't been bullying us off anywhere along the way. Again, you touched briefly there on Shells, another point dropped there down in Cork. I was kind of happy that, because, you know, that fear that the new manager bounce might just fall into the Bows game. You'd hope that maybe, you know, that the new manager bounce done for now. Anyways, 1-1 down in Cork, another 2 points dropped, but Bush certainly isn't having it his own way, as the, you know, the leaked dressing room video came out. I'm sure that was similar enough to Reynolds now at the start of the season, but, you know, it does add that bit of bite into it and a bit more pressure.
Like, he's obviously done an incredible job, and look, you don't like admitting it, but I've been pretty jealous of watching some of the scenes down at Talca the last couple of years. Like, that they looked a bit like how kind of we were about 3 or 4 years ago, and they were like, and obviously they went a step further, a couple of steps further than Bows did, and won it. But like, he's pushed that button so many times with them. You just wonder how, maybe they don't get, because of his career and his profile and his 100 caps or whatever, maybe his cachet just means that you don't get sick of getting balled out of it all the time. But like, I don't know, some of the stuff he's come out with this year, whether it's his performance at Daily Mount or having a go at the players going off for a break. And like, was he not taking his team out for nights out last season, you know, in the middle of it all? Like, I don't know. He's great value for the league and stuff. I find him hard to take sometimes. I mean, the Bows thing I found to be a complete publicity stunt. He knew by standing where he was going to stand, he was going to get all the attention. And then he tried to turn it on Daily Mount being a kip. And his, you know, kind of the inference was the facilities are not good enough, and I was like
there's no need for it. Like,
I don't know. There's not a lot of room up there, but I presume they would have had to make allowances for it. They've already put the opposition team camera down the corner because there's a fairly sizable Bows delegation watch it, and then there's kind of cameras and stuff. But I think if you want to watch it there, he would have been able to watch it there. Like, from what I've heard, that like he was offered wherever he wanted to stand. He could have got, you know, he loves being the man of the people. He could have gone into the mono with all the Shells fans and taking their adulation, but maybe he wouldn't be able to bring his chair and his laptop. But I don't know, like, he's great, but there is a bit of Mourinho. He is great for the league, but there's a bit of Mourinho there. And it does, I think, wear off after a while if you're getting hit by those messages all the time and hearing him screaming and roaring. How many times has he had to do that? A couple of weeks, a lot of games like that. It's interesting to watch, but like they're still got a lot of good players, and they'll get players back on deck, and I think they'll have a decent second half of the season, and they look very good at the start. Like they definitely, but it's hard to defend the league title. You see it in all sports when you win something for the first time, very hard to come back and do it again straight off.
Yeah, not many teams have done it over the years.
No, and it's a hard league. Like, we know that, not ourselves. Like, so it's his achievement to win it last year, and like Europe could be their season, and maybe the cup is their best route. Like, the cup's everyone's best route if you take. So I think the cup's gonna be a hard one this year to win. But like, I guess what you got to make hay, as I say, like when Pats and Shells are struggling a bit, and Bows are in a bit of a rich vein of form. It's why the points dropped against Drogheda and Waterford, while they were good performances those nights. Like, you're looking at those going, you need to. Even if you're picking up one, I know we don't draw, but if you could pick up one, like it all just at the end of the season, this is what you look back on.
Yeah, as you said, you know, it feels like being winning maybe 2 and 3, and that's probably the way it is. But You're looking at the table, but we're still not really ahead of anyone in terms of a bit of gap, a bit of distance. I don't think that maybe 5 points between Chelsea. I'm probably wrong there, but there's been no gap between us and everyone else yet in terms of, even being joint second. But again,
Yeah.
touching on what you said
First
about.
round, I mean, the first round of games was crap. So, like, you know, we were catching up in the second round. So it's kind of the third round has to be consolidation or else we'll get sucked into the pack again, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I'll just touch on what you said there about Duff. Like I was only saying it to someone there last week in regards, we got 30. I remember Duff in his prime. I sort of remember him being in Ireland, the France game and Henry knocked out how good he played. I remember that. I was just thinking when they signed, 20, 19, and 20-year-old players, like Damien Duff isn't anyone to them really. They don't remember Damien Duff playing. It'd be like, for example, Paddy Bonner to me. Paddy Bonner was playing when I was just born. Like when I walked in the room and started shouting at me regarding football, it would be like, well, it wouldn't really, oh, that's Paddy Bonner sort of stuff because I don't remember him. So you just wonder, that influx of a few younger players that they brought in back from England who would have been earning a few quid, did they really look at Duff like maybe me and you would? I'm not too sure.
No, but I don't think he trades. I think he gets a lot of his publicity out of it, and also because he's very interesting, and what he says is either funny or interesting or controversial. I do think, just from what you hear, and you don't win a league without being a good coach as well. So I think there is, he is. I think he takes stuff like the stuff. Remember last year when things were going a bit badly, and he started playing like Only Fools and Horses at training, and he was kind of had that private Instagram group where he was sending stuff to. Trying motivational stuff to the players, and like in my world, I come across coaches who are really good at that stuff. And we see if you watch that like that Arsenal documentary with Arteta a couple of years ago, where he's
Yeah.
trying to team every week. That's what a lot of modern day coaches are doing. So I don't think he's relying on walking into a dressing room and going, "I'm Damien Duff, go out and play." Like he, there's definitely substance to what he's doing as well. It's just he does seem to be hitting like he's bringing off players at half time. He's hitting the nuclear button a lot, and I just wonder. Like, yeah, it's hard to get you. Like we saw when Bowes were in a bit of a rush. It was hard for Reynolds to get them playing, and then the pressure builds. And I don't think Shells are going to turn on him by any means because of what he's doing and what he's achieved and how important he is to that club. Because basically that club is Damien Duff at the moment. But
Absolutely, yeah. Do you think
at
the
the
Duff
same
again?
time,
It
like,
was Duff
sorry,
and
I
the
just think,
owner. It was Duff and the
I'm sure
owner,
they.
and the owner ended up walking, sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Now there's money behind them, and there's but in terms of the crowds and the interest and all that sort of stuff and. It's definitely like if he was to walk, I'd be very interested to see how sustainable their success and their numbers are and all that sort of stuff. But what he's built is real, and I think it was always going to be hard to do it again. It's always hard to defend your title, and maybe Europe will give them another focus to go and do something like Kenny and Pat's last year, where they kind of found a bit of life through Europe. But yeah, I'd say they're frustrated by it because like a couple of the games it looked like they should have, there were games they should have won. Even with 9 men at Daly Mount, they probably should have got a point out of that in the end, the way they finished.
Yeah, absolutely. And they'll march on. I'm sure Duff might get something better out of the second half of the season, but we can only hope that they keep constantly derail. Just touching what you've been doing the last probably since COVID, I'd say around you've been doing the co-commentary or commentary anyway. How have you found that? It's probably not something I could do with too many cussing and blindings. You a bit more media trained, so it's probably been a bit of an easier transition from the stand up.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was COVID. Like Luke, obviously LOI TV or whatever it was called started. Sorry, it was LOI TV when I started launched during COVID. And at the start, like I always wanted to be a commentator when I grew up. I ended up being a written journalist, do a bit of podcasting and stuff. But it was a chance to try that. But also, it was a chance to go to games that I wouldn't ordinarily or like I was in the empty stadiums. It was just me and a co-commentator. Or at the start, I was doing kind of pitch sides. Pundit, we had a team of four at one stage doing it where we had a pundit beforehand. We scrapped that fairly quickly. We realized we didn't need it, but yeah, it's great. Like it's a different perspective. It's a different buzz. It's a really like I've obviously been watching football and all sorts of sports all my life, and you get annoyed with commentators and stuff. It's really hard. It's really hard. Like I really have a huge amount of, more admiration for them than I ever had before, in terms of like just ident. And it's harder. In the league sometimes than it would be. Say if I was doing sorry, I find Bowes quite easy because obviously I know who all the players are. I recognize them without even looking. Like you just know the shape of the back four. You know the shape of each of the players. You know what positions they all play in. You know who's left, who's right, all that sort of stuff. Whereas obviously I have a full-time day job. I don't get a lot. I think like full-time commentators would watch loads of footage and stuff. So if Cork City are coming down, for example, like just I'm not as familiar. Like I know Seanie Maguire, I know a couple of the players, but just and you don't get the team until about 45 minutes before the game. So you have an idea who might be playing. So just identifying those players, it's a bit tricky with the opposition. But and also we're volunteers, I suppose. It's not done for any money around like that. And as such, like, I try not to be overly biased, but I also don't go over the top in hiding that I'm a Bulls fan either. And but the weird thing is that your audience is largely away fans, or the fans can't get into the ground. So I'll be doing Bulls and Rovers on the Monday. And I I'm not going to sew it into them or not like that. It's not. I let my emotions get the better of me when Gretton scored the winner in the 97th minute or whatever it was against Pats. But like, largely, I try and keep it a fairly even keel. But at the same time, like, you have to be conscious of the fact that most people watching are probably Rovers fans, because they only have 400 away tickets. So it's interesting. It's a nice place to watch a game. It's a great view. It's really cool to watch it with some former players. I've done co-coms with Paddy Kavanagh, Alan Colley. Obviously never played for Bowes, but he does it a bit. Dave Scully, Carl Moore, Dan O'Byrne. Like, and it's really interesting. Like, even at halftime, just chatting to them about the game and what they see. I think Shane Supple did it one time as well. Here he's done it a few times. And like, normally I watch it with my dad and a couple of people in Section E, and while they all think they know about football, they don't know that compared to what these lads know. So it's great, like, to get their insights. And I meet my dad and a couple of friends in the Bohemian afterwards, and like, their impressions of what happened is, like, they don't know. My dad listened to this, he won't be happy with me saying it, but like, I'm like, what game he is watching? Like, but it's because they're caught up in it, and I'm like that when I'm at the game normally. So like, there's four of us do it. I don't do every game. It's myself, Richie McCormack, Tony Magner does it. Five is actually, Eric Lawler's done a bit of it, and Richie McCormack's come on board. It's him already, Steve O'Doyle from Off the Ball. So there's two professionals there. I'm kind of semi-professional, and the other lads do a great job as well. So it's fun. It's different. I wouldn't like to do every game because I want to go and shout and roar. And like, when it wasn't going well, it was a tough old station as well. Like, you know,
you have your own emotional battle with it as well. Like,
well, you do, especially like the draw of the game earlier in the season where, like, you know, I wasn't sure if Alan Reynolds was the right man, and, you know, I wasn't alone in Daily Mount, but I was the one with the mic, so you kind of
trying to get
and you're frustrated by it because you're 1-0, like, Bulls are 1-0 down and they're just not doing that with it. And Paddy cares, and Paddy has a different perspective on it because he's been around football, he knows the people involved, and it's and you can hear the reaction across the way as well. And you can't ignore that, you can't shy away, even though you're up there for the club, you're doing it for you're providing a service for the fans, so you can't shy away from that. So it's it's much more fun when things are going well for Bulls, and it's and the games are good. But no, it's enjoyable. I've had fun doing it, and you know, stuff like the Gretton goal, like, that's magic. I did Georgie. I had a bad moment a couple of years ago. I don't want to gross out all your listeners, but it was about a norovirus went through the house, and I thought I'd escaped, but it was Monday night, and Bulls were playing Derry. It was the night Georgie Kelly scored the winner. Or the equaliser with the kind of bicycle kick, game, remember? Yeah. Three-all game. But at half-time, I was like, I don't feel great. And about midway through the second half, I was like, oh, fuck. I gave the mic to Dave Scully, and I was like, I just gave him a look. Ran downstairs, puked everywhere. And then like, I went back up, and Carl Moore was there for some reason as well. I think he was doing half-time stuff. And the two of them were kind of trying to bungle on. And I was like, I can't even stand up here. I completely was wiped out. I managed to just get back on the mic. I think they called one of the goals, because if you ever got the highlights of that back. But I managed to get back on the mic just in time for Georgie to score the winner or the equaliser. I think it was an equaliser. But I was like, I wasn't in a good way at all. So it was that was my kind of soldiering through moment. But it was grim enough. Because I always wonder, like, if a commentator feels sick when they're live on air, what do they do? Now I know. You just have to get on with it. But it's a fun thing to do.
Yeah, so you got a lot of plaudits as well for the commentary with the Gretton goal. Rightly so. It was quite good because you could tell there's a bit of balls in you, but also I think you've done very well to restrain yourself. You know, that was maybe probably halfway down the gantry and onto the pitch.
I don't know if restrain is the right word, but I know I kind of hit a pitch as well. Like, I listened back to it, like, my voice nearly broke about four times in the middle of it. That's happened to me once, where my voice cracked in the middle of it, and I haven't really lived it down. So you can't prepare for that. Like, you know, you can do a script for the first few minutes, or, you know, the before the game, you can have a think about half time, but you can't really know how you're going to react to a last minute goal in a derby. And it was such a tense, that match was so tense. The sideline, you get a great perspective on the benches, like, and the stuff that like Gartland and Detzer had a massive row that night over the when Bowes didn't give the ball back when the keeper went down for treatment. So there was real tension between the two benches, and Pat was trying to kill the game. So there's a bit of frustration there as well. And but you could sense Bowes were coming and coming and coming. Well, yeah, and which I think I called the disgrace on air, which thankfully I'm probably could have got sued for libel by the ref. You know, I called it something anyway. That was thankfully that I think it made the highlights cut package in the end. So like that was a terrible call, but it didn't cost us in the end. So yeah, I was like, then you're just kind of hoping didn't you know if you get caught up in the moment and then you're hoping, geez, I hope that sounded okay. And then yeah, the feedback's been good for it, and it was yeah, I've obviously watched it back a few times. It's such a great moment and a great goal, and the Jody's just gone, because it was such a miserable place for a couple of years there. Like, it's just great to see the place absolutely hopping and rocking. I kind of half screwed up by saying Dublin 4 instead of Dublin 7. I don't know what was going through my head.
It's a lens of mine.
Picked up a few times. I know. In fairness, on the Ian Byrne, I think his name is, the guy who does the pitch side videos, he cleaned it up in the edit and it sounds way better. I don't know, but sure, I wasn't thinking. It was just I blacked out for a moment. You know, it was amazing.
Yeah, it happens to the best of us, doesn't it? Suppose, Rory, you yourself, you're going, Bowes, a very long time. Patrick here, he said he remembers you going into McDonald's. I think it might have been after a Dundalk Cup loss. You had red and black paint on your face. There was a few tears going down the side after the defeat. I'm not sure what you remember that specific moment.
I was actually going to, because you put on the kind of list of topics, the worst moments. And I was trying to give it a bit of thought, and I was thinking of Patrick, and it wasn't red and black paint. I got face paint, and I painted the big club on my face for the cup final against Dundalk in, well, it must be in 02 or 03, the Gary Haylock. We lost 2-1 to Gary Haylock's Dundalk, and yeah, that was a poor L day, a poor choice of mine, and a hard day, because we should never have lost to them that day. And I walked out and I saw the first person I saw coming out was Dan McDonald, who went on, is now my colleague in the Indo, but at the time was in the Dundalk jersey. I was like, with this face paint on my face, and just like, you just look like an absolute tosser. So I kind of deserved it really for doing that. So yeah, I'm going a long time. My dad's from Fisbury, from Norfolk Road. My grandparents lived on Norfolk Road. So I, you know, Daly Mount's been part of my life since forever, really. Cause, you know, I remember going down St. Peter's Road one day, and like it was all closed because it was a concert Faith No More were playing, and there was like Faith No More fans leaning into the car, and Daly Mount was always just something that was there. And my dad went in the 70s, but when I was a kid he was playing a lot of sports, so we didn't go for a while. I was a massive Liverpool fan, but I remember going to, we went in one Sunday afternoon for the second half of a UCD game, I remember, and then the cup final in 92 was my first game where it kind of caught me. And Tillo's goal that day, and we went out actually that night. My aunt on the other side, my aunt Carol, her husband John's actually a Bowes member now, but she was a backing singer for Linda Martin, and she'd won the Eurovision on the Saturday, and Bowes won the cup on the Sunday, and so we went out. We went from Lansdowne to the airport to welcome Linda Martin home after winning the Eurovision, all in head to toe Bowes gear. And my uncle Sean on the other side, who died 2 years ago, but was a Bowes lifer and an honorary life member, I think, he threw a Bowes scarf around Linda Martin. And Johnny Logan was there as well. So like, this is about 20 years before Trondheim, or certainly 10 years before Trondheim, and Logan taking over. But there was a bit of Bowes in Logan's eye line. So we went celebrating the cup final at Dublin Airport, welcoming Linda Martin after she won by me. But after that, like, it kind of just, we started going. We lived in Blessington and Wicklow. So we used to drive up every Friday night.
Some trek back then, I'd say.
Yeah, it was. But I suppose we kind of went to see my granny and kind of went into the games after that. And there through all the Turlock O'Connor days. My son's name is Turlock O'Connor. We were there for, I wasn't a huge fan of Turlock O'Connor at times during that era, and then obviously the Roddy days, and the season I probably went the most was the year we nearly got relegated. So I was down at the playoff in Cove, which was a fairly dark season, but I think I went to more games that year than I ever went in any year. So it kind of, as I got older in terms of a teenager, I just became obsessed with it, and like Liverpool Celtic went out the window, and it was all I cared about. And yeah, it's been there ever since. There's been a couple of years where I wouldn't be able to go as much. I covered the league as a written journalist for a couple of years. So I had to adopt a kind of a neutral stance, and was, you know, I didn't get, Bows were good at the time and I was a freelancer. So I actually spent a lot of, I watched Bows win the league in Drogheda. Was that 09, 08 or 09? I think it was 08, while covering Rovers against Sligo Rovers in Talca Park with about 500 Rovers fans there when they were the mid-ranking team. And I was doing it for all the papers. So I was like trying to be quiet at the back when Jason Byrne scored the goals. But not doing a very good job of it, as all the Rovers people in front of me in Talca were like looking at me going, what the fuck is this guy up to? So, yeah, so a couple of years I wasn't able to go as a fan, but then I kind of went full-time on rugby, which allowed me to be able to pursue Bows as kind of my thing to do on a Friday night whenever there was no rugby games on. So it's been a huge part of my life.
Yeah, I was just was having a look through there. I didn't realise you had been covering the League of Ireland back then, but came across an article on me Facebook memories there. Your name was on it. It was the Sligo away game. The Free From Desire was being belted out.
Yeah.
I think you were covering that as a journalist too.
I was, yeah, yeah. All the shoes on the pitch, all the Adidas runners on the pitch. I missed, like, I remember being in the press box that night looking across going, geez, I wish I was in there. Like, that was epic. So, I was doing it. I did it pretty from about 08 to 2013, and then I went full time into rugby. So, I would have covered, like, I was in the time Rovers beat, the time Bows lost to TNS, I was following that from an airport in Turkey, waiting for a transfer to go to cover Rovers in Tel Aviv. And it was just Rovers fans all over the airport laughing at Bows losing 4-0 to TNS while I was kind of heading off to cover them, win a European match. So I was in a couple of really weird situations. But I like covering the league, but I didn't like covering Bows, and I didn't like missing big stuff. Like if the opportunity had come in, I would have happily gone down the route of being a football journalist. But it kind of, you know, I played rugby as well, and I love rugby in a different way. I'm not really, I never really had a team, so it kind of suits me to not be affiliated with any of the teams at all and just kind of cover it relatively neutrally. Although all the different fan bases seem to think I'm against their team, but it allowed me to be a fan because I would go to Dublin games as well, so I can enjoy Bows, I can enjoy Dublin, and then rugby's my job, so I can be a sports journalist without losing the ability to go to games. And even like my son's nearly old enough to take the games now, he's 5, and I took him to the Aviva, so like he was wearing his, he's spreading the gospel, he's wearing his Bows jersey in Crest and Rat Lines today, so he's spreading the gospel, so it allows me to have that, you know, so it's good. But yeah, I did it for a while, and I remember being at a game, we were playing Drogheda one night, and we played Drogheda were really good, and like, you know, Paul Keegan was playing for them and Doolan was the manager, and Drogheda were winning and Bows were pushing, and the nightmare for a journalist on whistle is a last minute equalizer because you have to change your whole thing.
Yeah.
And I was watching Bows pushing for a winner or an equalizer going, oh gee, I hope they don't score because it's going to affect me up. And I was like, hang on a second, what am I, like, this is Bows. So it was kind of weird for a couple of years, but yeah, thankfully I'm able to, when I can, obviously my job takes me away from it a bit, but when I can focus on it and enjoy it. And like, I love going on a Friday night. So it was miserable for a couple of years there, but it's, especially now, it's fun again. But even when it was miserable, it was kind of, it's our misery.
Yeah, I think Bows probably been a journalist nightmare the last 6-7 weeks or the last minute winners.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, the Galway lads, and like, you know, they're often freelancers at our games doing 3 or 4 reports for different publications. So that's it. I haven't done that for a long time, but that's an absolute, that's a ball ache now, having to rewrite your piece at the end of it and like change everything. So yeah, that's not fun for them.
It's probably never been a better time to be a journalist in the League of Ireland in terms of, you know, much cover paper everyone's getting. Now, stuff has probably helped that. Kenny going to Ireland, a lot of it probably happened the last few years. It's probably opened a lot more opportunities for probably young journalists to get involved in.
Yeah, like, it's a shrinking market, but there's different ways of doing it. And like, even you come home on a Friday night now and there's often like kind of the vlogs from people behind the goal at different games and often at our games because the atmospheres are good. It's certainly our place are giving it way more attention in the end though than it ever got when I was younger. And there's so much more outlets in terms of different podcasts, like your own, like fan podcasts, then also like, you know, LOI Central, you know, Off the Ball do a podcast every week. It gets discussed way more on kind of mainstream stuff, like, you know, like second captains, like Indo Sport, like, you know, it's a different world from, like, it always got good, a reasonable amount of attention in the paper. Certainly not every paper, but like, you know, people like Aidan Fitzmaurice, Neil O'Riordan, Owen Couser, Paul O'Hare, Mark McCadden, Paul Lennon before him. Like those lads, like they love the league and they put a lot into it. And, you know, you had 8-page supplements in certain papers, but it was still a bit more niche. Whereas now it does seem to, especially with Duff, like, in fairness, like, Duff does give it a bit of cachet, but even, like, you listen to Off the Ball on a Saturday, you got Owen Doyle, Keith Tracy, and Gartland, maybe Johnny Ward, Shane Keegan on, and while they're there to talk about the Premier League, they often just naturally, because they care about the league and it doesn't feel like it's different, they just branch into conversation about what happened at the game they were at the previous night. We've got games every Friday night on Virgin. We've got LOI TV. Like, it's not perfect. And there's loads that we, like, you can't, I'm delighted with where it is, but you're also very aware of the fact that, like, it frustrates me so much that Bows are turning people away every Friday night, and, like, the facilities aren't good enough. And, you know, even there is so much, even though there's more media attention, I would consume more Bows media. If there was more people talking about Bows, I would listen to it, I would read it, I would pay for it. But I'm aware that we're all weirdos who obsessed with this thing, but, you know, but, like, there's more of us than there ever was before, like, you know, so it's great. Like, it's definitely a better place to be, but it's at the same time, if you want to be, if there's anyone listening who, like, would like to be a sports journalist, it's hard to get into, and it's a shrinking market. So it's not impossible. I never put anyone off, but it's a difficult industry, and there's definitely more openings within the league than there ever have been before.
Yeah, definitely, in terms, you know, individual and, you know, starting off yourself and trying to give yourself a platform. You know, social media is the biggest promoter, the biggest marketing tool anyone can use. So
absolutely,
anyone did want to go down that line of work, it's definitely there to be taken advantage of.
Yeah, that's changed a lot, because I'm 42, so I came through around, you know, I came out of college in 2004, 2005, and there was a far bigger freelance. Like, I freelanced for like 5, 6, 7 years, and I used to go to matches and do, like, that Rovers Benoit Yehuda game. Like, they qualified to play against Juventus the following week. I did every report for every national newspaper for that match in Tel Aviv, and then I did all the follow-ups. Like, I don't think there's any real opportunities for someone to do that anymore, to freelance in the same way, but there's other ways into it, and there's other ways of doing it, and different new ways of communication and stuff as well. And, like, you know, it's great. Like, I consume as much League of Ireland media as I can. As I say, we just need more people, and to get more people, we need to be able to open our doors a bit more. And that's why, like, you just want to get this bloody stadium built and going to get that whole thing moving.
Absolutely. I suppose you've touched on a few European trips you're on and work. Did you manage to get away with many with Bows over the years?
Yeah. I was in Aberdeen, which was magic. Didn't get the Kaiserslautern. I was in Rosenborg for the Hold Me Now game. I went on Norwegian TV. We went to Rosenborg training. A lot of us saddos, like, what are we going to do? We'll go up to... I think I went to see the stadium twice before the game on the Wednesday, because we all went on a package. It was all like, we went with the team, and there was a charter flight, and we all went over, and we were all on Trondheim. Not a whole lot to do in Trondheim, and what there is to do is very expensive. So we went up to Rosenborg's training ground for a look, and they were training. I got, for some reason, I was interviewed on Norwegian TV, and I said with utter confidence that Bows are going to beat them 2-1 and progress, or 2-0. And progress, and they beat us 4-0 the following day. So I went to Ghent for the Intertoto Cup game, which I don't remember anything about really. Went via Amsterdam, which was not good, don't ever go on a European trip via Amsterdam. There was one fella slept through the whole game, and that was a huge crowd at that. I think I was the only Dominic Foley loyal fan in the whole fan base at the time. And then he went on this spree, and he played so well against Ghent, they signed him controversially, I think, on a free. And then I was actually, my last European trip was Real, but I worked at Real. I went over as a freelancer and went on the ferry, and myself and Neil O'Riordan were there, and I went for a couple of points afterwards, but I was on the kind of 2 a.m. ferry back, and I got the last train from Real to, and I don't know, were you in Real? But Real, you probably heard about it.
Yeah,
a unique place.
Sunny Real,
like, unbelievable. But the last train from Real to Holyhead, which leaves Cardiff at about 1 a.m., I've never seen anything like it. Like, it was animalistic, that train. Like, I just put my headphones in and just I was hoping to get a bit of work done. I was like, fucking, I'm not getting this laptop out, because I don't know what'll happen. It was crazy.
Get off the train in your hands.
No, it was incredible. I kind of wish I'd stay, even though Real didn't look that appealing a place to stay. But I haven't been on a European trip since, largely because we haven't really been in Europe. But my sister was in at the TNS game, and she was in Salzburg as well. And yeah, we haven't really been in Europe, because I wanted to go to Thessalonica, but then once we heard we weren't going to be allowed in, I didn't do it. So kind of clashes a bit with my work, because I go on the summer tours with rugby. So if we do get into Europe, it's gonna be it's hard, but God, I'd love to do it. I'd love to get back there, and like watching those games during COVID, like the night they nearly beat Farahar when Wardy missed that great chance and Pauk, I was just like, no, I need to, like, I'd love to get back on another European trip, but I suppose we have to get into Europe first. And but yeah, I've done a few of them. I was there, like I was on the plane home when Gerard Byrne sang "Home Me Now" on the tannoy. And I don't think I was there when he sang it for the first time, but even it was like during the second half of that game, we were 4-0 down, and this lonely voice pitched up with the opening bars of "Home Me Now," and a few people joined in. It felt very poignant at the time. I think it was Gerard and a few others of his mates, but that was a great trip.
Yeah, I suppose. You said you were working a lot over the time. Any good memories in terms of league wins, good nights out, any away trips that stick with you?
I like Kilkenny was amazing. That whole season, you know, I mean, anyone who's around for it, like, I've a friend who's a United season ticket holder, and I think it was the same year they won the treble, and he talks about their season in the same way I talk about that season, because we looked like we were in a hole when we drew down to Kilkenny and everyone wanted to sack Roddy, and then we go and beat them, win 6-4, and rolled on from there. And there was just so many big moments, like the wasn't it Glenn Crowe's winner in the cup semi-final against Rovers, and like a packed out Denny Mount, probably the last time Denny Mount was properly packed in terms of all four sides, and like there was about 10,000 there. It was such a magic season, and it was so long. It's like, it's getting on, it's not quite, what was it, 23 years then, but they're starting to add up.
Yeah.
Like, we're not long off Rovers. I don't know if you remember, Rovers used to sing a song where they sing the Johnny Cash song, "Ring of Fire," but they go one, and they count to 23 and then sing 23 years since we won fuck all. And I don't think we're far off. Maybe I'm giving them ideas. I don't know if anyone listened to this, but like, they'll start singing that about us again now soon. But that was brilliant, because I was 18 or 19. I remember watching, someone brought a little, like they don't exist anymore, a little portable TV. And was down the front, and the Bowes game finished 5-0, but we needed Shells to lose to Cork, and Ollie Cahill scored the goal for Cork and 1-0, but their game went on way after ours. And there's about 25-30, there was a pitch invasion, but there's about 30 people, or maybe more even, crowded around this one little, like, and it's smaller than the screen I'm looking at myself on the Zoom call here, a little tiny thing. And it was probably on delay or whatever, but it was incredible. That season was just, it was magic. And then to win the double then a week later was brilliant. And then obviously we sacked Roddy, so we had to start it all again. And like, you know, beating the Bobby Ryan goal to beat Shells a couple of years later was magic. And the more recent ones, like, I have real fondness for that Shane Supple, that team that kind of came out of the dark days season. That built itself up. Yeah, the one the beating Derry in 3-1 in the cup. Dinny Corcoran scored.
Yeah, that was a great
night. And I kind of managed a couple more away trips than I normally would that season. And like, we were so unlucky with that Darragh Leahy challenge. You know, we really did, that team deserved the cup final and deserved a cup. So like, it's like as recently as the 3-2, like that's one of the best days we're ever going to have as Bowes fans, you know, coming from 2-0 down to win 3-2 in Tallaght. Like, the first win in Tallaght, I think Kevin Devaney gets forgotten sometimes, but he scored the goals, beat the Rovers for the first time in Tallaght. And like, that was, after a lot of misery, Darragh Leahy's goal. They've given us a couple of good days in the last couple of years, but yeah, nothing as tangible, I suppose, to cling on to as actually a trophy. And yeah, I was at the cup final as a fan when we beat Derry on penalties. But I don't know, partly because I was working at the time, and I don't know, I didn't love that team as much as I loved other iterations of the Bowes team. I don't know, was it just the way we were spending or where I was in my life or whatever. I feel far more connected with them now than I would have then. And when I was 18 or 19, that team, Kevin Hunt in the middle, you know, Simon Webb, Derek or Damien Lynch, Crow up front. I love that team that Roddy had at the time as well. So I guess part of it is kind of where you are in life and how often you're able to go and all that sort of stuff. So it'd be nice to experience winning something again. It'd be nice to get it over the line. A cup, like the two cup finals have been so. Well, the last one was just so miserable because I don't think any of us expected to win to win that day. And then Afolabi scores, and you're like, geez, maybe we could do this. And then they, like, Pat just crushed Bowes that day. And then the previous one, I'm still maintaining that Bowes won that because Kevin, I still think Rory Feely scored. But to lose on penalties was just grim. So yeah, it'd be nice to have one day out that doesn't go south in the next couple of years.
Yeah, I remember when we got that that beaten cup final against Pats the second time. Too emotionally distraught now to talk about the first one, but the second one, I remember the sort of the league came out of camp to myself that basically the whole week Bowles had been practicing crosses, like receiving them and defending crosses, defending set pieces. Why? Because that season Pat scored three or four goals against us, whatever it was over the season. Every single goal that Pat scored came from either a set piece or a wide cross. There was none from centre play. It was wide position crosses, corners, and we spent the whole week just defending them. Of course, the first goal that comes in is a cross
First
from
goal,
a set piece.
Mulroney. Yeah,
Yeah.
Mulroney, two goals from crosses. Oh, that was so soulless. But like I as I said, like I never that the Arse had fallen out that season a long time before that, and I never really believed they were going to do it. But still, you're there. You want it to happen, and we'd had such great days in the Aviva in Europe. Like those days, like those COVID days, coming out of COVID and going to the Aviva and playing European games in the like 25-degree heat, and taking on Pauk and that Starnan and like Georgie Kelly knocking in goal. They were great. Like that's you kind of have to. I don't know. Maybe I've learned that you just got to enjoy the moments as they go. Like because. There's not necessarily going to be a big prize at the end of it. Like, hopefully, at some stage, we get a trophy. But when you get a good day, you got to take it and enjoy it, you know?
Yeah, as I said, I was scored a goal at the Bowls game sporadically when I was younger, probably 2003. I should have been going a few games during the summertime. My granddad would have brought me, started getting sort of going full time 2011, and obviously we have won absolutely nothing since then. So hopefully this year can be the year that changes it. But from a journalistic point of view, have you when you're working the League of Ireland, any funny characters you met along the way and interviewed?
I kind of missed the like I think I missed the golden years of like you know kind of you know Keighley and Roddy going after each other and
I told him.
like Pat Dolan like when they were going head to head and even like Ollie Byrne just ring, like I know from talking to the lads like just ringing you out of the blue different times just give balling you out of it. I had an interesting relationship with Michael O'Neill. He didn't like things I wrote about Rovers a couple of times, so I got pinned up against the wall. He pinned me up against the wall in the Brandywell once and absolutely balled me out of it. So. I think everyone at Rovers knew where I was from, so they kind of they didn't really like me. And so when I started writing things about them, they didn't particularly appreciate it. But no, not so much. But you meet a few mad characters in the press box a little bit, but no, it's become a bit more normal of the League of Ireland over the years. And and it's easy to kind of go down the greatest league in the world chat world kind of line. But like, there's so many good people there as well. So many good people who are good at their jobs and really take it seriously. I didn't have any nothing completely mad. Anyway, you get enough of that just going to the game on a Friday night as a fan, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And he said, you know, you had a Bradley and Duff had a bit of a spat, but you know, the media obviously still trying to poke the bear after, and they both kind of went, "Ah, yeah, forget about it. We're not giving you, I'm
Well,
giving
just
you enough."
Reynolds and Kev Doherty made up for it then a couple of weeks later.
Yeah,
Like,
a
I don't think
couple
any
weeks
of the
later.
managers in the league are talking to each other
Yeah, there's about to be no
at this
handshakes in
stage.
any game by the end of the season.
But I think, like, if Rennie wants to get Bowes fans on side, he should just be fighting openly with Damien Duff in front of us. Like, I think people would like him a lot more if he just started taking on everyone. And because, like, you know, he's a tough bastard, but like, he was quite submissive or something in the like as a Bowes manager for a while. But if like what you hear what happened in Talca at that time, if he did that in front of Bowes fans, I think Bowes fans would like him a lot
Yeah,
more.
I don't think too many people know. I think the understanding was that Duff might have said something to the FAI about him working in the under 21s that he wasn't happy with, and Reynolds just sort of didn't tell anyone, didn't tell Detter, didn't tell O'Donnell, didn't tell the squad, just went straight into Duff's office and pinned him up against the wall allegedly, and asked him what his problem was. And I think rumours that came out that the Shells dressing room was a bit sheepish after that before the game, and Bowes I think went on to win it. But you know, we see
Yeah,
a bit more of that in the.
exactly. I've heard the same rumors, but like you know, do that in front of everyone, and you get people on side far more. Because I think you know, like a Bowes manager taking on Damien Duff in front of the Jody stand, it go down a bit down pretty well, I think. So, because yeah, like it like I don't know, yeah, he definitely does seem to be connecting a lot more with the fans now, and like it's still going. We're still going on a bit of a journey with him, but like. And winning games is always going to be the most important thing. But when I heard that same rumor, I was like, you know, if you want to do that, do a bit of that. Not necessarily exact all of that in front of the fans. You're going to get people on side. We're simple beasts, like you know. We'll get behind. You're still wearing a Bowes tracksuit, like you know. So if you start taking them on, but yeah, beat them. That's going to win you more friends.
Yeah, I suppose you would have been there when Reynolds wasn't the most liked player when he was playing against us at Dalymount. How was your initial feeling when he sort of came in? Obviously,
Well.
everyone has to give him a chance, but it did go south quickly
Yeah,
before it went good.
I saw it coming because I knew that Pat Fennell was close to him and they'd worked together at Waterford. And I remember when the Divine Era was going south, I thought it made a lot of sense. But I did his first interview as for the club website. I did that YouTube video that they put out, and I was a little bit disappointed that he didn't, because he's not, I don't think he's a natural media performer. Like, he's not a particularly, apparently, like, he's great behind the scenes, and players, you can see the players love him. And that's one of the things that, like, even when things were going really badly, you're like, going, hang on a second. Like, you know, Ross Tierney's gone straight over to celebrate with him. He's not put, like, he doesn't have to do that. Like, it's clearly, he clearly feels something. Like, a lot of the players he's worked with in the 21s saw for Bowes because of him, or in large part because of him. So there's obviously something there that we're not seeing. But I think when you come from being a former Shamrock Rovers and Shelburne midfielder, whose main job was to kick Kevin Hunt, and you've never had any connection with Bowes over the years, I thought he could have made more of an effort at the start and tried at least. And it's not just what he says in his press release, where he keeps, you know, he kind of almost goes over the top in saying the fans were great tonight. I don't know. I'm not sure what he could have done, but there was something missing. It never felt right, and I thought he never really made any effort.
Was probably the
well, the results didn't help either. Yeah, well, that was the big thing. But even before he even kicked the ball or, you know, took over, that first interview, I was like, it left me a bit cold. And then there was parts of last season where I really saw something, and the results weren't going great, but you could see a shape and the players were playing for him. And then I thought it just lost momentum, and I think maybe Devoy and Tierney coming back mid-season, they just weren't able to get it together. And then, but I have to say, like, I mean, if you, I can't. I mean, people have text messages for me saying he's finished at halftime in Talla. You know, I really didn't see.
I left at halftime in Talla.
You're not supposed to admit that. But like, you know, it was. It didn't look like it was retrievable at that point. Like, and what's happened since? Because I don't care who the manager is if they're winning. Like, I don't really. Sorry, like with obvious caveats. But like, what Alan Reynolds did as a player doesn't really interest me. If he's able to come in and win games for Bowes, the fact that he doesn't give a wave to the crowd or whatever, it doesn't really matter. Like, what I was annoyed about was just the fact that it wasn't coming together, that the patterns weren't working, that the players were trying, but they weren't getting anything. And it's been a miserable couple of years, as I alluded to. Like, I was so sad when Keith Long left, because there's so much time for him. The Devine thing, just never, like, apart from that, what was it, 6 games at the start of the season, never really got off the ground. They kind of just ran out of all sorts of steam. And then I was kind of going, I don't know what the future is for this. But I also know from my covering sport, chopping and changing managers is not a good recipe for success, really. Like, so it's like, I was torn on it, but I just didn't see it turning. And I'm so glad I was wrong. Like, I'm happy to admit I was wrong. Certainly, like, this season and like, as long as if the results keep going and the performances keep going and the squad keeps getting better, then I'm happy. I'll apologize to him to his face. Not that I really shouting at him or anything like that, but, you know, I did lose faith completely. But you're like, that's your job. Like, as a fan, you're going to do that. You're not really rational when you're at a game and you're 2-0 down to your biggest rivals, even though we played well that day. Like, you know.
It's like a film we had seen before 1,000 times in Tala.
Yeah.
Play great up to half time, and either side of half were 1-0 down. And
the defending for the 2 goals was so bad. And you're just going, like, what are you doing all week? Like, and then, but then the fight, the spirit, that's all you want. That's all we ask. And that's why it feels different now, because you can see this connection. The connection is built. I think the players were pretty pissed off at the fans. I think you could tell that, even in their celebrations in Tala, like Lee Kavanagh coming over. It was as much celebrating to the fans as it was with the fans.
Yeah.
But I think they're now learning what it's like when it's good at Bowes, because it wasn't for so long. And like, that trust has to be there a little bit as well. So I get the sense that's back. It's obviously fragile. If Bowes lose the next 5 games, it'll change again. But it doesn't feel like that's going to happen. It feels like it's much more solid ground. So as I said, I'm happy to eat my words over Alan Reynolds, because like, it was never about, I suppose I did talk about his personality at the start, but I don't care that he played for Shells and Rovers. If he wins games for Bowes, it doesn't really,
yeah,
it's not relevant. Like, you know, all I want is Bowes to win every week.
Absolutely. Even sort of after we beat Cork 1-0 at home, that was like, I'm not sure if you're doing comms that day, but like, that was dire and to watch. We went again then, even in Tallow, it was a 3-2. Said we were all, a few of us were sitting in a pub in Dublin 7 for the second half, but we sort of said, just even now, he might have turned this around, but it's going to go back to square one against Pats. You know, nothing's changing here. This is a little sort of up on the roller coaster that seems to be constantly going into the ground. But I'm happy he's turning it around. I'm happy we don't have to pay him a load of money to get rid of him and try to get someone else in. And it's another 2 or 3 windows before he gets his team in. And, you know, that cycle seems to have ended, particularly this season. But, you know,
I was on the just on my tally, like, there was, you know what I mean? There's a Lewis that runs all the way to Smithfield after Bowes Rovers games. So there's like a special Lewis. and not, they don't publicize it very well. So like, there was at least two Rovers fans stuck on that Lewis who only wanted to go three stops to go home, and they were stuck. And all you could hear was people replaying the goal. Everyone was so tired, even though it was middle of the day, there wasn't that much singing around. There was a bit, but all you could hear was the goal being replayed on phones all up and down the carriage. And these, and they're also, they're all afraid to actually. Like, I could tell, but they were also afraid to say anything. It must have been the most miserable experience of their lives. Yeah, all the way to Smithfield.
That, and it's a long way up and a long way back when you're seeing another few carriages of balls come by.
Yeah, absolutely.
I suppose that's another miserable moment. What for them, what was your most miserable moment over the years?
I think the worst was the Red Bull Salzburg second leg. Because like, we wouldn't be where we are now in terms of the club that we are had we won that. Sorry, I don't know. It's a real sliding doors moment, but it felt like the whole club was gone that night. And it took a couple of years to come to full fruition in terms of the financial crisis and the kind of rebirth of the club, I guess, and the work that so many fans did, and the gigs and the Olympia and all that stuff that we all went to. But that, and I don't know what we were saving. Like, if that Mark Rosser's back pass hadn't been under hit, and Bowes got out and we won that game and we made millions, like, we probably would have wasted it, and we may have ended up in a shit stadium out by the airport. And I don't know if that was ever going to happen with the crash and everything anyway, but still that night, I remember just no one talking. It was just being around the members bar and everyone just staring at their feet, at their pint, into space. It was pure desolation. And what it, like, even the cup final, if he's nothing comes close to that, because we felt like that was the end of everything. So that was a pretty dark one. I don't think any, like, the day we lost to UCD and were condemned to a relegation playoff, and Paul Byrne had a t-shirt with the relegation odds on it that he was flashing to the fans before he came on, as if he was going to score a goal and then, like, put this thing up ironically. But we lost 2-0 to UCD. And the abuse that Roddy and the team got going off. Now, they went down and won the relegation playoff in Cove 5-0, and I think they won the second leg 2-0, so it didn't matter. But that feeling of we're going to get relegated for the first time was pretty bleak. But they're the two that kind of stand out. I can't think of anything else on the pitch that really hurt anywhere near those ones. The cup finals are pretty grim as well, but I guess you have to get to a cup final. There's a good run there. There's kind of a good... there's a couple of good memories along the way.
Along the way, yeah, absolutely.
And the days themselves are, well, the second one I didn't enjoy that much, but the first one was a good day. So, but yeah, that Red Bull game was the worst.
I'll flip it on its head now and ask you for your favorite two moment over the years.
I think Kilkenny. I think I talked about it already. Kilkenny was magic. The 6-4, like, there's no win over Rovers I didn't enjoy, but and a couple of the recent ones have been great, but the 6-4, well, just having been there, it was, I remember we were in it was a Swiss cottage, or was it one of the pubs around there, the Viscount, and a Rovers fan walked in and just basically turned around and went straight back out, because there's a few of us still floating around, because there was so few at that game. It was like, you think about the crowds now, it was a horrible L day, and I'm sure loads of people have talked about it in your pod before, but it was just, it's incredible. I still watch the video now regularly enough, and it's like one of the best things that ever happened. Like, it's still, however many years on, it's still amazing to think back to that game and what football can do. So yeah, that has to be the one. And yeah, the European trips, like, it gives you so many great nights and great days, and like, this season's given us some moments that we'll be talking about in 20 years as well. Like, I hope. But the fact that we kicked on and won the league that season as well, that was just incredible.
Yeah, I suppose who's probably been your favourite Bowls player over the years?
The standard answer, Kevin Hunt.
Sometimes the obvious answer is the right answer.
Yeah, but like, yeah, that was my team, I suppose. I remember his debut down in Bray. I think it was himself and Dean Martin. Was playing on the wing. Dean Martin had the name we should have all remembered, but Hunt, just from the moment he stepped onto the pitch for Bowes, just, he was so good. But I just been loads, like, I mean, I just, I love, I think we're going to remember, we're going to be talking about Dawson Devoy in 20 years in the same way. Like, I hope he doesn't get picked off by one of the other clubs, and like, I love the fact that he hasn't played for anyone else. And you know, we've gone through that period of losing players to Rovers and not like you felt like you couldn't fall in love with a player anymore because they were gonna they were gonna go down the road like and obviously it can't happen with Devoy, but I hope you're building a club now where he doesn't have to leave. That if he does leave, it's back to England. Because in fairness, the way he's playing at the moment, you wonder how long it is before an English club comes back for him. He's so good. He's dominating games. He cares. Like, and I try not to be too nostalgic with stuff as well. Like, obviously, you like the players of old, but like you got to embrace the team that you have because like they're the future and they're the present. They're the future. And like Devoy is brilliant. I just love watching him play. I love the way he wears his heart on his sleeve. I love the fact that he came to Bowes games when he was away. Like he was in the away end and in Talca the day they lost 3-1 the cup. That horrible day. I don't know how he ended up signing back for Bowes because I don't know if I'd come back to Bowes after being in that terrace that day because that was nasty. But like I think if we can hang on to him and he plays 100, 200 times for Bowes, he'll go down as a great, like, you know, Detzer and that team, as I said, have a real soft spot for them. Like Bucco is just so important to this club and has been for the last 10, 12 years. And, you know, to score against the Rovers on his debut and then just to become the player, the leader that he has, he'd be right up there as well. So, but yeah, the standard answer is Kevin Hunt. And I'm too young for Jackie Jameson. You know, Glenn Crowe was right up there, but, you know, he went the shell. So he loses points for that. I once got thrown out of Coppers for waving money at Glenn Crowe. So I can't put him at the top of my list. I went to the ATM, got a wadge of 50s and started waving in his face. Bouncer threw me out and he said, "I completely understand what you did, but I can't let it happen in my life."
Brilliant. Brilliant. And I suppose, what would be one person, not has it have to be Bowes, one footballer, dead or alive, you could go for a drink with? You know, you'd like to sit down and probably interview him as a journalist.
I can't say Maradona. I went for the standard answer with Kevin Hunt, so I can't say Maradona, which is the obvious one that I think everyone goes for. I go Roddy. Like, I don't want to know. I'd love to, like, I still, I first, his book is upstairs and I still haven't read it, but, you know, that season, I'd like to pick his brain about that season and hear a couple of the yarns and stuff like that. I don't know. I've met a lot of sports people. I've met a lot of people. Like, I don't necessarily. I think the "never meet your heroes" line is probably not a bad one to abide by because they often don't live up. Like, they're great sports people. It doesn't necessarily mean they're great characters. But I'm sure there's a few. I'm sure Roddy would live up to it over a few pints and kind of you get a couple of stories out of him.
Yeah, well, my advice with the book would be ditch the book and get the audio book.
Okay.
Why I had it because it's Roddy narrating the whole way through, which is brilliant. I listened to it when I was away on holidays a few years ago. It was like Roddy was with me the whole way through.
I read a couple of chapters. It's great stuff, but yeah, that's good advice. I'll take you up on that.
Absolutely. And I suppose you've been both through and through since you're a kid. What does it mean to you in this day and age?
Yeah, because I've heard you ask this question before, and it's hard, isn't it? Like, it's hard to kind of put it into words what it means because it's everything in some ways. It's like, it's what I think about when I'm not thinking about anything else. Like, it's what the amount of times I've thought about, you know, winning the Euro Millions and what I do to Bowes with that money. Like, you know, it's my default. If my wife heard this, she wouldn't be very impressed, but it's my default thing I go to. I think about it way too much. I nearly lost a job for basically my boss was sitting behind me. She's like, "You're just on that forum all the time." Like, I don't know. It was very unsubtle coloring. I nearly had to go to Luke and say, "Come here, will you change the color in the forum? It's too obvious." So, like, it's family. Like, I guess it's kind of it's a home away from home. I love going there. I go with my family. Like, I used to be standing section F and G and standing at the back. But you kind of get to a certain age and I don't know. I felt like I couldn't do that anymore, especially having been away for a couple of years. And I sit in E now with my dad and I did sit with my uncle before he died. But my other uncle goes, my sister goes. I know all the people around me. Like, it's like that cheers thing. Everyone, you know, you go and there's people that I've never spoken to, but I know they're Bowes. Like, you see them in the street and
you nod your head.
Obviously the clubs, but yeah, like I love going there. It means so much. It means way more than it should. It fucking ruins so many weekends. I come home on a Friday night after a defeat and it's gone. Like, and I know everyone listening to this now understands that feeling. And you're just like doom scrolling on Twitter and texting people about like Rennie out, ready in or whatever. Like, and it's just it drives you to extremes. But I don't understand how people don't have something like that in their lives, because the euphoria and the feeling, like those years where we couldn't go, the defeats felt so bad, but the wins didn't feel the same. But the wins when you're there, when they pull something off for you, it's just so magic. Like, so yeah, it's a hard thing to put into words. And I've heard people try to grapple with it when you've asked them before. But it's important. Like, it's, you know, it means an awful lot to a lot of people, and not enough of us. Like, I find people don't know about Bowes, people don't talk about Bowes all the time. I find that a bit weird. Like, I find it's like you're missing out on the greatest story ever told. Like,
absolutely,
you know, like,
yeah,
we beat Drogheda 1-0 last night. Like, you know, why are we not talking about this? But yeah, it's our little obsession, and it's like, it's not that I don't want it to get popular. Like, I'd love if we built a new stadium, and we will eventually, hopefully, and it's full and everything. And the bigger it is, the better. And I love when, like, the amount of people came to the Aviva that time. But at the same time, there's just part of you that's like, I remember there was only 1,000 of us going to this, and you could nearly name all of them and say hello to all of them. But not that I want to go back to those days, but yeah, it's special. Like, it's important.
Yeah, that's what I said. You sort of those days you miss, but at the same time, the bigger picture does matter.
I don't know. Someone put on the Facebook group last week, which I look at through gritted teeth sometimes or whatever, but someone put a footage up of 10 years ago, and there's no one there. Like, and you're like, how did this happen? You know, the work that the lads there have done to build it, and obviously some of it's organic, but a lot of it's the work that the club have done. It's phenomenal. Like,
I think when you're looking across the attendances, Pat seem to have not plummeted, but they've definitely had a fall off in terms of their crowds. They haven't sold out the last few games at home. I said Shells seem to miraculously sell out 5 minutes before kickoff. They saw their signs go up. I'm not sure if that's just a bit of a marketing ploy. Rovers, they'll tell you there's 6,000 or 7,000 there. I think a lot of them are probably season ticket holders that just got them and never really show up to too many games. We've plenty of those as well. Plenty of members that just don't go. It's nearly in terms of Bowes, probably nearly a social thing. I'm a Bowes sort of member in this day and age, but we're just the ones, no matter how shit it's been, or it hasn't been that good, but you just wonder, like, imagine the demand if we were, you know, 5-6 games to go and we're within, you know, when Arsenal's roar of Rovers, or we're a little bit ahead of them even, you wouldn't imagine what the demand for tickets would be like. And we were crap all season, you know, but second bottom of the league, couldn't buy a goal, couldn't buy a win, and still can't get a ticket for the place.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the reset, like, if you can't go, like, someone will pick up your membership card off you. Like, it's kind of, it's still full. You know, I again, being over the far side commentating, there's no room. And even, like, there used to be, if F and G were full, and I know the fans are split and stuff, but, like, there's no, it used to be A and B were empty. Now with the whole thing, there's no space anywhere. Like, it's incredible what's happened, but at the same time, it's, again, and I'm not putting on anyone necessarily, but it's like, you just want Dublin City Council to get their finger out and just get this thing done, like, get it going, because I think it is going to be hard when we move. I don't know how hard. I don't know. Obviously, we need to know what the plans are, but everyone wants to, like, I don't want to leave Daily Mount ever. I love the old place, but at the same time, we can't
be dragged out as well.
I've been dragging it for years. How long ago was it since John Delaney said they were going to do it?
Like, that was the 2020 for Euros, the legacy sort of project. And here we are staring at the barrel of 2020.
It's obviously, it's coming, so you can't build any kind of more temporary stands like the mono stand, and then you're locking people out, and you're like, 4,000, yeah, we're selling that every week, but it's only 4,700, and that's income that we're missing out on. That's, like, Rovers, they might be they might not actually have 7,000 in the ground, but 7,000 people have bought tickets, so that's, that's, and they're getting European money, all that other stuff, so it's so important for us to get there, and I just really wish it just get, I'm sure everyone does, everyone listening wants, I know, as I say, no one wants to leave, because we all love the place and the quirkiness of it and the history that's there, but at the same time, as a club, we just need to get this thing done, and the longer the start goes on, the more, because we all know, like, you just look at the Children's Hospital, like, you know, state projects, they don't happen very smoothly, so there's no guarantee it's going to crack on relentlessly for 2 years and get done. I can't wait till it's done, and it's going to be amazing when we're able to go back into it at the end, but it's going to be a bit of pain in between.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose one of the possibility homes would probably be the RDS. I think that's due to be finished revamped soon, isn't it?
Yeah, the Anglesey stand, the old stand, has been knocked. I think the rest of the ground is kind of the same, with those kind of three temporary stands, which are the same ones that were there. There might be roofs going on the ones behind the goal. I think it's all going to be covered. And then the one that the Bowes fans were in the, was it the 08 final? It's the same. It's the same time, but it's a grand stand. Like, the view is very good. The pitch will be very good there. Unlike most Bowes fans who would come from the north side, I live in Rathmines, so it doesn't really bother me if they're playing in Bowes Bridge. I do think it's easier to get to than say, I'd hate the idea of playing in Chicor, even though I don't mind going to Chicor for a match, but I don't think playing our home games in Pat's home ground would really work. And Talca, I can't see that being a runner. I've heard Donnybrook, but I did ask Leinster, and they said they haven't had any approach for Donnybrook. Maybe, you know, they're generally pretty good at kind of, if they have been talking. But the RDS is definitely on the cards, and it might be a couple of different stadiums, and kind of depending on the fixture, they move them around. So,
I don't know, like, what's your sense of
whether people would come? Pardon?
They might do a Rovers and have a few games down at Turner Cross at home, even.
Yeah, you never know. You never know. And then they can sing some of our old songs back at them. But like, I think RDS is fairly accessible. And obviously, there's bars around there and stuff as well. It's not the worst place to go, but it's going to be hard for people who live in different parts of the north side to come across. It's going to make it harder to get big crowds, but it obviously opens it up to the people that are being locked out at the moment. So I don't know. Yeah.
There's a sort of crossing that as well. The way I think about it is there's one very, very good connection we have at the moment in terms of sponsorship and cooperation with sort of government, which is Dublin Bus. And you just wonder, could there be a facility there to run buses from maybe, you know, a few from Dublin 7, a few from Dublin 11, down a mere direction, if Dublin Bus would provide these and put them on, you know, return match day ticket, €5 ahead, something like that. I think it's something the club should be looking into. For sure. Obviously, it makes it difficult for the landscape of terms. You know, we've got plenty of country fans. I think Rotwell was telling me before, there's just as many fans in Meath now than there is in like Dublin 11, I think, which is crazy. Yeah. Obviously, a lot of people have moved out that direction in terms of, you know, over the Celtic Tiger and stuff like that. But, you know, it is that extra probably 25, 30 minutes journey from Dublin 7 over to that neck of the woods on a busy Friday evening.
Yeah, and it's going to be like, you know, as a once-off, like the Aviva was great and it was such a different day and like both fans, Rovers fans mingling in different parts. It was surreal in some ways, but that was a once-off. And like, yeah, it's going to be, like, it's not a bad place to go watch a game. Like the RDS is pretty nice, and I think the new stand will be, it'll be a nice experience for people to go to. But yeah, it's you know, and there's more parking around there than there will be in different parts of Dublin. But yeah, I'm not sure. I think the novelty will wear off pretty quickly. I think, and you can hear that from the way, you know, Dan Lambert and the club are talking, that they know this is going to be potentially a hard couple of years. But at the same time, you position yourself, you're in a nice stadium on a Friday night in Dublin, you could potentially open yourself up to new fans and become a bigger thing, because Fisburgh is not that hard to get there from. Anywhere, nearly everywhere. I've lived in about 5-6 different places over the years. I've always had a direct bus to Dalymount. And that wasn't by choice. It's just, it's like, Fisburgh is so accessible. So we've got a lot going for ourselves. Whereas, like, you know, moving out to Talla or Greenfield site, if we'd ended up in Manchestown, it would have been, or Harristown.
Harristown.
Like, it's much harder to get there for people who are not from the immediate area. So that's a real bonus. But yeah, the fear is obviously the stadium isn't going to be big enough, but I don't know. That's it. We'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
Absolutely. And, look, we'll move on from that section and we'll probably look towards this Friday night. Cork away hasn't been the happiest of hunting grounds for us the last couple of times they have been up, but we're certainly going down with a bit of confidence and a bit of expectation to be leaving Turner's Cross for 3 points.
Yeah, it's the kind of game we've kind of struggled in, isn't it? Like, the Bows have dropped point, kind of beaten all the teams around us or above us, and apart from maybe, I suppose, Drogheda are around us, they probably are above us, but I don't know, like, it's from every. I didn't see their game. I did listen to a bit of their commentary of their game against Shells, and they, by all accounts, were very good. And obviously, having Shawnee Maguire up front makes them incredibly dangerous. It's not the same as when he's there with Keating. And I think, is their striker gone back to the UK, the guy they brought in short term? I think I heard that his deal might be up around now. So he'll be a loss. And the Colo Sullivan appears to be kind of, he seems to be going, like, I presume he'll be there against Bowles, but he's going to be gone soon as well because he's so good. Sounds like a lot of clubs in England want him. So, like, this is the kind of game that if Bowles, to go back to what we were talking about earlier, if they do have any real ambitions of certainly challenging for the league, you got to be getting 3 points against one of the bottom two. I think you got to be aiming for maximum points against Sligo and Cork for the rest of the year. And, you know, even Europe, like, I love the fact that we don't draw, but I wouldn't mind picking up a point here and there from a losing position if we have to. Like, Bowes were the dominant team in Turner's Cross first game down there, and then like Cork were fairly good against us in that in the game at Dalymount, the James McManus game that you were talking about earlier. So, it's gonna be tricky, but it's not like, it's a cliche, but like even Sligo away, when Sligo had four teenagers in the back four, that was a hard game. Like, there's no, you got to go earn it in this league, and. You know, you just hope they've had a good break, that a couple of bodies are back that weren't, you know, fully foreign, like Gleeson would say, like Connor Parsons, that the squad's a bit stronger. and that they're hungry for it. Like that they've had a taste of what it means to win games for Bows. And like that away end and Turner's Cross, I presume it's going to be a big crowd going down. Like that's getting the love off that away end is brilliant. And that's the kind of vibe that they've got going at the moment. So long may it last. So yeah, like they should be good enough to beat Cork away, but Shell should be good enough to beat Cork away as well. And they weren't. So you got to go down and earn it.
Yeah, it's probably an interesting week in terms of there being no football. You know, you have a few Bows players on social media, and you'd be looking where they are and what they're up to, sort of thing. A lot of them are probably a bit more quiet than usual. I think Dinny Corcoran put up saying he came back one time after the week break, 2.5 kilos heavier, or something like that, 3.5 kilos heavier. He had it up on Twitter there last week, and I was just thinking, like, that's probably a nice little extra belly that would slow you down maybe half a yard, you know, if you get in behind.
Yeah, it's one or two. Don't need that.
Not the mouse anyway.
I wasn't going to name names. Yeah, like, but at the same time, we our squad was a bit stretched, and we had a couple of lads who were struggling. So, and a couple of lads have played a lot of games. So I think the break probably came at a good time for them. And obviously, Graham went away with the 21s, but there wasn't that same strain on lads going away with the international and like that. So you'd hope that they're going to come back fit and fired and fresh and be want to be back at training this week. Like that they should be hungry for it because they've got a real opportunity. So we mentioned Parsons earlier. I think there's a lot that we haven't seen from him that he could be a real factor for us the second half of the season. You know, there is a chance that Moussa will explode and really contribute. You know, Colin Whelan, there's goals there. We just haven't, like, they can find a way of getting him on the ball, getting him into games. Like, if the confidence is rising, you'd imagine that they're going to start taking those chances, and it might blow a couple of teams away. But equally, there's a lot of footage on them now, and the shape change that they went through, you know, teams might start adapting and coming up with solutions to what Bows are doing as well. And Dawson's probably going to get more attention. So it's like they've got to keep going. They've got to keep evolving. And as we said earlier, a couple of, like, I doubt there's going to be anyone in for Friday, but I'm sure there's a window open yet. I'm not sure. But
I think it opens July 4th, maybe. You think it opens?
Yeah, so there's a few more weeks with this squad. So, yeah, like it's a dangerous fixture, but like they should be confident going down there. And they should be more than capable of getting the 3 points. And if they do, I think we can feel really confident about what's going to happen for the rest of the season, because like I don't think anyone likes playing against Bows anymore, and I think teams like coming to the Mount for the last couple of years, but those days are starting to go again.
Yeah, I think we're really now, as I said, we could win the next three and it could go Diddy's up and we'd be back to square one with a few defeats, but I think the next three games are going to be really determine what we're going to be looking at. We've Cork away, Waterford away, and then Rovers home on the Monday, and that could be, you know, a really head-to-head clash. The likelihood of beating Rovers three times in around the one season. I know if we do that, we're definitely not winning the fourth one. So that's 3 points marked down the line. Nobody's ever done the clean sweep. But you know, if we go into that Rovers game on Monday, they won't be coming down to Daly Mount on a Monday. Europe around the corner after playing. You know, they think they have the Monday game prior to that as well, the actual European game that they have to squeeze in before they go. So, you know, if we go into that game on Monday, two wins, you know, just still 6 points behind them with the game in hand, and we come out there firing. We can win that. We can maybe look at, you know, can we loosen the checkbook? Nothing's guaranteed, obviously, but you know, get Mills firing. That's what we're all waiting for. We seem to shorten up at the back. I know Gretton is probably going to be gone now, and that could change. Three cleans in the last four might instill some confidence across the board. But it's about getting firing up front. I think that's probably going to be where we lie is going to, at the end of the season is going to be.
Yeah, like. A tough, like a European football would be a great result for this team, given where they were for the first round of games and where they were even coming into the season. There was so much uncertainty about it. So, they put themselves in a position where that's achievable. And like, just because we don't normally beat Rovers four times in a row, no one really does the clean sweep. Like, you got to believe that. Like, they've had they've been the better team, even 2-0 down in Tallaght. They've been the better team in that first half. So, they're putting themselves in the positions and they're dominating games. Now, possession wise, where you know, like they can have a bit of strut about them and have a bit of confidence. And you know, I think you're right there when you said earlier, like they're kind of winning two and losing one, they can turn the third one into a draw and maybe even pick up a few three in a row. Like, you know, that's where they kind of and it's just and even turning 1-0s into 2-0s and just becoming a bit meaner at the back and a bit. And I don't think it needs to be drastic improvement anymore. I felt like it needed drastic improvement in the first round of games. But now you're looking at it going, can they just tweak things? Can they
sharpen the knife?
Yeah, yeah. Like, it's that's where they are. That's such a better place than they've been. So, but it's easy to drop off because the other teams are all good and they're all performing. Like, that's what one of the things I love about the games is, like, you never have a clue what's going to happen because all the teams are dangerous and, like, draw to show up and they're just really physical, really aggressive, and they go 1-0 up and you can't score against them. But, like, you know, there was a time where you go to a game against, say, UCD or a bottom team and you kind of knew what was going to happen and it wasn't that interesting. We're now, like, everyone has to be on it. The fans have to be on it. The players have to be on it. And that's one of the reasons it's so popular at the moment. So that means you got to go to Turner's Cross with the new manager, new assistant manager. You know, Moyler's pretty highly rated as far as I know. You got to go down and perform. But, like, our players are better than their players as far as, you know, what we've seen this season. Seanny Maguire part aside, like, I'm sure if we could sign Seanny Maguire, he'd definitely improve us. But you got to make that count. And you got to, if we have dominant spells, we got to start making them count and scoring goals, because that's probably what's letting us down at the moment.
And if you could plant your flag in at the end of the season, where would it, what do you think? Obviously, the hope is a double again. You know, not exactly 6-4, literally half of it was a 3-2.
But, yeah, I was going to Ireland play New Zealand and rugby on the day after Halloween, the 1st of November, which is Saturday, and the league is finishing that day. So I'm really worried about missing Bowes lifting the trophy and having to watch it in Chicago. So I'm hoping that Bowes win it with a game to spare against Shells in the penultimate round.
Or a cup, like, win even, you'll take at the week after.
I think third is definitely realistic. Second or third is definitely realistic because it's a crowded field and it's going to be the most consistent team who gets there. And at the moment, Bowes are kind of the most consistent team outside of Rovers. And if they can keep that up and they can keep picking off 3 points after 3 points, there's not, like, without Europe to worry about this season, there's, like, they have a singular focus. So, you know, why not? Like, I mean, like, why not go for the league? But, like, I hope they do give it a good goal, but I just don't see them having the depth or the quality or even the experience. If it does come down to a 2 or 3 way battle in the end game, like, Rovers have all the experience in that scenario, and you just wonder whether just it might be, as you said earlier, a season too early. But it's a really good team and a really good squad. It's a little bit imbalanced, a little bit light in certain areas. So you wonder, you know, we don't have the full facts because there's a summer coming and hopefully they hang on to all the best players and then add one or two more. And Gretton is a loss, so it's a bit of an unknown quantity. But I think third would be a great achievement and a great season, especially the way it started. It would be great to turn that around. And, like, I don't know, was it yourself who put the Bowes record in the cup in the last couple of years up? But, like, the Bowes are the... I hesitate to use the word cup specialist, but in terms of getting through rounds and getting to semi-finals and finals, it's incredibly consistent over the last couple of years. Now, Pat seemed to win it every second year, so maybe it's their turn, but they've got Europe on their mind. So if they can get back to a cup final, we're surely due one of them. So it's been a fun season so far, and I think, certainly the second round of games was fun. And I think there's reasons for us all to be optimistic going into the next round.
Absolutely, yeah. I think this one, you know, the first one was doubted there. The second one is, we've really been good. And, you know, this one, I think, is going to tell where we are in terms of a squad. This is going to be the one that sort of decides the map of this team, I think, for the rest of the year. We go down to Cork, big game. 3 points is probably what we need to be getting if we want to be talking about what we have been talking about and getting giddy about. What's your thinking going into it? What's going to be the score? Who's going to win it for us?
I think Cork will probably score. I'd say 2-1. We'll give the vote of confidence to Whelan to score the first, and then Moussaid to come off the bench and get the winner with, you know, 5 minutes into injury time, and that'll be the moment to kickstart his season. As I said earlier, I'd love to see Ross Tierney get a couple more goals under his belt as well. But hopefully Moussaid comes back and he's fit and relatively fit. Obviously, it's going to take a while for him to get up to full match sharpness and shed a bit of the timber. But, like, there's a player there and it's so exciting having him. It's just, you want to, like, there's a whole, everyone wants to get behind him, but we haven't got to see him. So, that's where they go 2-1. Whelan gets the first, they equalise, and then Moussaid comes on to wins it in injury time.
Yeah, and I think we're going to do 2-1 as well. I think Cork will probably get that still bit of a bounce out of the manager. We might get the early goal. I think we might do the Bohemian special this season and come back in 2-1. Before we just wrap up, I suppose you've seen it better than anyone else, the change in the stand in terms of the atmosphere. I know it was easy for us to say, the atmosphere was great tonight, but I suppose, what have you seen? And how has that changed and how good has it been?
Well, the team's winning, so, like, that's the main thing. It's not, like, it gets very toxic very quickly, and I understand that because everyone cares, and it's and we talked about it, we've been through the Reynolds thing. You know, if the manager doesn't have any kind of goodwill or cachet, it's very hard for, or you know, it's very hard for him to kind of win the crowd over. But it's been magic the last while to, like, you know, to draw the game. He was saying, I know you're not a fan of some of the songs, but like these people are singing like the whole game, people are singing. It never stopped, even though like Bowes were losing 1-0, it just kept going, and everyone's behind the team and applauding them off at the end because we can see what they're giving. And that's what, it's not easy. And it's like, I understand why it got, and I was as frustrated as anyone, but like it's so much more fun when you're going and everyone's behind it and everyone's connected and the players are coming over at the end. And like, I don't get the dynamics anymore of why people are sitting in different areas and who's falling out with who and stuff. And it's kind of does. And I hope in the new stadium, whenever it gets built or wherever we go, there's a singing section and everyone is able to go to one place and be together. Cause in fairness, like they tried to move people out of F, but like people have been sitting in F for 20, 30 years and, or as long as that stand's been there, they don't want to go. So they're stubbornly sitting there. And you know, I'm an E, so I don't want to move out of E into D. And D, like, you know, we're all stuck in our, yeah, so like hopefully one of these stands behind the goal or there's a designated area and it's all there from the start. But the one thing that having A and B, like having the two ends, and even like you're getting songs being started in the Des Kelly now as well, which hasn't happened for a long time. Like people are so into it and so engaged with it and so behind it. It's brilliant. And long may it last, because when it wasn't like that, when we were all fighting with each other and fighting with the manager and booing them off, it's self-fulfilling. And like, you know, I said, I was part of it. I wasn't getting up and trying to start songs in E, but like when everyone's behind it, it becomes a really hard place to go. And like you saw the draw the left back kind of mouthing off the Bowes fans at the end. And like people don't like the Bowes fans anymore. That's good, because we're on top of them. We're making it hard for them. So
yeah.
It does seem like, without knowing the dynamics of it and not being as close to it as I used to be, it's hard to know what's going on, but it does feel like everyone's kind of just a bit more together with the team and getting behind them, because we're like, they're winning. Like it's a lot easier as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Without getting something like into trouble, as I said, the FNG or the apartheid fans that have come in and taken over our spot.
That's because you're on the bar and you left it too late to get out.
I'm not going to disagree with that either. You'd be in the bar as well if you had been watching Reynolds from the stands. Yeah, so look, you're saying 2-1. I'm saying 2-1, Rory O'Connor. I thank you very much for your time. I hope you enjoy your little trip to Australia. I'm sure you'll have a few schooners over there along your way. As you do every week, come on the Bowes.
I'm on the fucking Bowes.
We don't care if it's home or away. We are the Bowes, and we're proud of our name. So we'll all bounce around and we sing it again.